This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. It's 7:34 and the morning run continues. I'm Julian Ng, and together with Tan Chung Han, we're looking at the day's biggest business news, including how retail stores are closing down in droves in America. And Bank Negara is giving a grim warning about our savings. But first, over the weekend, Donald Trump and Xi Jinping summit took place. I don't know whether we can call it a summit or was it just a friendly get-together.
That's right.
Because no trade or investment deals were announced, no decisions made on North Korea and the South China Sea, only a shared time getting to know each other and arrange future meetup. Well, how nice.
I mean, it would be a tall order to, you know, try to get something really substantial, given that they only met for about 21 hours together. And I guess
they were stuck in a room for 21 hours. Are you serious?
Well, no, I mean, like, they were at the Mar-a-Lago, you know, for 21 hours, around the grounds. But yeah, 21 hours, that was it.
So after you take away time visiting the grounds, having a drink, having some hors d'oeuvres, that would leave very little time.
Yeah, 21 minutes or so, probably, yeah. So, question is, you know, what was the big takeaway from that summit, so to speak, and I'm using air quotes there, between Xi Jinping and Donald Trump? And, given the market commentary that has come out since the end of that meeting, it's essentially that they got to know one another. They got to meet face-to-face, and that is, you know, crucial. So it's no longer just Trump demonizing this faceless China. So now he actually has Xi Jinping. He actually has to shake his physical hand. And now hopefully that will, as opposed to his virtual hand,
He do that alpha handshake trying to pull Xi Jinping to his side?
Well, I just saw some stills. I didn't see any photos. But, you know, I think it's a tactic, though. He's got his hand lower, so it forces Xi Jinping, at least in some pictures, to go, you know, above, you know, which makes it seem like, you know, he is subservient to, that Trump is the foundation, I guess. I don't know. I'm reading so much into this picture.
My question is whether this was this non-confrontational meeting was a good or bad thing, because obviously we know that there are problems in the region, that's North Korea, there are problems in the South China Sea, as well as over the weekend we heard all these missile launches in Syria and some events in Egypt as well. But on the other hand, if you became too confrontational about the whole thing, that may not be a solution as well.
No, and you're exactly right. So, you know, given that we are seeing yet another instance of that pragmatic Trump, right? I mean, we have seen this time and time again.
I can't believe you're using pragmatic and Trump in the same sense.
I know. I can't believe it as well. But at the same time, I mean, you go back to his meeting with Shinzo Abe. In the lead up to it, you know, he had been criticizing Japan big time. Likewise with Angela Merkel, you know, and the accusations hurled against Germany. China, obviously, you know, very much front and center. But then yet, over those 21 hours, everything was fine and dandy. And the headlines was that, oh, they got to know each other really, really well. So then question is, does this remove one of the major sources of uncertainties for global markets? Right? Because, if you recall, you know, over the last few months, there was talk about how, oh, this could spark a trade war between the world's two biggest economies. But on the back of these rather friendly meeting, well, perhaps those concerns might be eased. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I saw one or two headlines about how China may consider, and some of these SOEs or state-owned enterprises in China may consider investing in the U.S., trying to, very ironically get away from the high cost of China and going to America and set up investments over there. So it's becoming very interesting. And just commenting on Donald Trump himself, and this is my worst, of course, impersonation of Trump.
I want to hear this. Let's go, buddy. Let's go.
I'm just going to read it normally. The relationship developed by President Xi and myself, I think, is outstanding. You know, that's what he said. But also some comments from corporate America with the Ford CEO Mark Fields saying that the Trump and Xi meeting help strengthen U.S.-China ties, and that's a very good thing for a company like Ford.
You know, and also, you know, when you consider this meeting came on the back of 2016, what was a record year of lending by big Chinese banks overseas, you know, again, so they are very much expanding their sphere of influence, at least, you know, in dollar terms, or rather yuan terms, right? So when you see this kind of rising influence from Chinese entities, or SOEs, as you put it that way, well, not just SOEs, but banks as well, you know, then it makes you, you know, wonder is this an encroaching into a territory that we have so often and for so long equated with the US's, with being America's, right? Being the global superpower of the world. Is China giving or challenging that notion? I think that's very much a key theme as we move forward this year and for the remaining years of the Trump presidency.
Mm-hmm. I think going forward, what's going to be interesting is how China is going to fix their economy, because there are problems over there with a new normal of slowing growth and the kind of structural overcapacity that exists in many industries, together with their desire for rising influence geopolitically. And now added to that list, how to placate the United States, what kind of policy they would come up with to tie all those together.
I'm going to put you on the spot here, right? Julian, you ready for this? I know this is at the risk of oversimplifying this really, really complex relationship between China and the US. Julian, does China need the US more, or does the US need China more?
I think they both need...
We should make this a Twitter poll. Right?
Yeah. Well, this is where the fault line of the Trump presidency exists, because America can't exist in isolation. They need the entire world. And that is why I think so many people are worried and not happy with the regression in the protectionist policy, right? Going back to America first kind of policy. But I don't think that both those economic powers can exist in isolation. And that is going to be my easy answer to you, Han. Just still in America, though, we have this other news that more retail stores are closing down. Payless, this company that's apparently very ubiquitous in the United States, has filed for bankruptcy. And Rue 21, a retailer of teen clothing, is also projected to be the next casualty. Han, is Amazon to blame for this?
I mean, well, essentially, that's the scapegoat. That's a scapegoat for the turmoils that the American retail industry is suffering right now. But I think what this story is also highlighting is the fact that it's across the board, though. So you got Payless, like you mentioned. They're on the, more affordable end of the spectrum. Whilst on the other end, you've got Ralph Lauren as well. They're set to close their flagship store in Fifth Avenue.
That's major. If you are a retailer or a fashion house at Ralph Lauren and you close your store on Fifth Avenue, that's big news.
Exactly,
right?
And it's big
in
news.
The fashion world.
So you got Payless, Ralph Lauren, and then in between Rue 21, which according to unverified sources might be Julian's favorite store. I'm not sure.
What? I've never even heard of them till today.
It's a teen apparel retailer, dude. I'm not gonna lie. I know this is radio, but chances are you can pull off the Rue 21 look better than
I
can.
Oh, really? Yeah, Thank you so much. I take that as a compliment.
It is. So now, Rue 21 has got 1,000 stores. They're also preparing to file for bankruptcy, could even be as soon as this month. So when you see the kind of carnage, can I use that word, carnage,
yeah,
that Amazon is leaving in its wake, it really makes you wonder as well about the health of at least these brick-and-mortar industries or brick-and-mortar stores in the U.S. Now, when you compare that with the most recent non-farm payrolls that the U.S. released for March, it came out on Friday at about 8:30 p.m. Malaysian time, and it showed that the retail sector in the States saw its weakest hiring for 2 months since the end of 2009. So retailers are certainly getting hit hard, and then U.S. jobs are at stake as well.
Yeah, some other startling numbers, scary numbers. 1 billion square feet of retail space would be closed down. That's about 10% of the total retail space that exists in the United States. And retailers also, as you mentioned, cut 30,000 positions in March. There was the CEO of another retailer, Urban Outfitters, Richard Hayne. He cited another problem, which I think is reflective of the gung-ho attitude of any business, right? If you're positive about your business, you want to move forward. What they did was that they, in Richard Hayne's words, malls added way too many stores in recent years, and now they're forced to capitulate on their decision. And this is reflective again of what we talked about earlier in China. The problem in China is also structural overcapacity in a lot of these very dead industries like steel and coal, right? In Malaysia, we saw that with the oil and gas sector as well. So many people were going into it as though it was out of fashion a few years ago. years ago, and now they're forced to having.
I see what you did there. Well done.
Yes,
very
thank
good.
You. Now they're forced to rethink their position.
Now, obviously, besides Amazon being there, the big beneficiary here, if I may use some anecdotal evidence, I remember when I was in the States and Gap was closing a slew of stores across the United States. You know, you've got interior designers, including myself. You know, amateur
what?
Interior
you,
designers.
You were
amateur bluff one lah. You know, so there are actually many people who then went into these stores and took all their fixtures and then were able to like start up this like second market, you know, where you could have, I know, like Gap shelves in your living room. You know? So it was really, really cool. And like to see myself and some of my friends do that, it was quite cool. So perhaps the amateur interior design industry can get a boost from all these retail spaces closing down. I don't know.
Yeah, also whether this big sucking sound that's made by Amazon, it's going to be a contentious anti-competitive issue, and that deserves another whole episode, I believe, which we will be talking about more in future. The time now is 7:45, and we'll be coming back with more top business conversations, including the question of why Bank Negara is worried. Stay tuned.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.